Join the chorus. It's time for another North Melbourne Footy Club update with Dean Vasek and special guests on Hashtag Kangaroos.
Welcome to another episode. My name is Dean Vasek. You can find me on Twitter at Hashtag Kangas. And you can also find me on Instagram as well at Hashtag Kangaroos Podcast. So I haven't done much on that in the last few days. Still working my head around it. I'll build that up over the coming weeks. That's a slow process at the moment. It's going to take some time with that. Just be patient with that if you do want to follow me there. Anyways, today was a bit of a preview of our performance against, not preview, a review of our performance against St Kilda over the weekend. A disappointing loss once again. What do you say? We seem to be going through the same script over and over again every week, saying disappointing and words to that degree. Before I do that, I'll go through a bit of AFLW news. We've had a couple of players leave the club through expansion clubs. The most shocking one, I guess, was Aylan Gilroy, who's packed the bags, works at the club shop. Has decided to leave the club, exploring other options with Hawthorn, I believe it is. So that was probably the most shocking one. She did say she would recommit to the North Melbourne Football Club a number of weeks ago. Now all of a sudden she's backflipped. But, that's part of it. Unfortunately, you're going to lose players. And, we certainly did it to the expansion club, so we can't complain too much. And, all the best to her. She seems like a lovely Irish girl. So, hopefully she does really well at Hawthorn. And the bigger loss I would have thought was Daria Bannister, a very young girl. Highly skilled, half forward pocket type of player. Certainly, a player that can break the game open. So, obviously, disappointing to lose her, but like I said, that was probably bound to happen with all these expansion clubs coming through. They do have the trade period going on at the moment. They've got the draft coming up next week, all that sort of stuff. So I will do a preview or a review of that in the coming weeks when that's all said and done, and we can talk about their list and how we believe they're going to go through the year, because that is coming up very quickly. I think it's going to start in August. They've already agreed to the EBA, so the girls have got a nice little pay rise, which is good. A little bit more would have been nice, but they've certainly got a little bit cause for optimism that it's going in the right direction. So, it sounds all positive with the AFLW, and hopefully it's going to be another cracking year like last year. Anyways, I'll put on Frank right now. We'll talk about a review of the performance last Sunday, and, we talked a number of other issues as well. So, anyways, I won't hold you up. Put on Frank right now.
All right, so I'm joined once again by Frank the Tank. So, Frank, before we get started and talk about our game against, I can't remember who it was, against our flogging against St Kilda on Sunday, I wanted to talk to you about a couple of injuries have come up, obviously, in the last half an hour. Cameron Zerha out for 2 weeks, and what's his name's out for 6 weeks, Charlie Coleman. He's getting surgery done to repair his knee that's been bothering him for the last few weeks, which is obviously a big blow, a lot of supporters calling for him. How does this affect? Do you think this affects how we go into the draft tomorrow? Like, do we maybe go for a Dirksen who's a key forward in Western Australia, or do you think you just go for the best available if he isn't the best available at pick two?
Oh, look, Dean, I think we're at the stage now where we desperately need to fill holes. So I think most recruiters sort of say you get the best available, but I think we're probably in a position now where we need to get the best available key position players. Yeah. To really help us, and heaven help us, maybe unearth a jewel in the rough.
Do you think we're with previous mid-season drafts, do you think we're putting a bit too much emphasis on the two picks we're going to have tomorrow, that they're going to be game changers? Because generally, mid-season draft, previous picks, besides the odd diamond in the rough, or lottery ticket, or however you want to call it, you don't really. It's probably not going to be, you know, a big change, is it? Like, it's not going to be a player that's going to make a big change to your football club going forward, is it? Like, you're not going to find an ex-Wayne Carey, I wouldn't think.
No, absolutely not. But I think we just need support in that area. And I think it's probably even... I think when you really don't have those key defenders, even the good ones who can play down in the twos, I think there's probably a level of learning for the players that play around key defenders, even in the reserves.
Yeah.
That probably don't have that that ability to learn how to play and feed off a key defender or a key forward. So I wonder, you know, how much a help that would be to our half backs and our half forwards in the twos.
Yeah, yeah.
Even if we got two quality talls that played at centre half forward and one at centre half back, predominantly in the twos, you just wonder whether that would help the structure and of the ability for the team to learn.
Yeah. I mean...
But, that's where I would like us to go. Let's see what happens.
I mean, do we need... I think Brady Rawlings has pretty much said that we're going to go for a more mature player, because that's something we are lacking on our list. Those players that are probably, 24 and above. We've got a lot of players that are either 30 or above, or around, 23 and under. We've got a big gap in between the 24 and 29-year-olds. Do you think we'd go for that type of player? Like, I'm not so sure who's available as far as, the age demographic. Do you think we'd sort of go for that player, or do you think you just maybe pick another Jacob Edwards-like type of player and, develop them?
It's maybe one of each, Dean. I don't know, but... I think they probably need definitely a mature key position player to help out, even if it's just, sort of the understanding that, look, this probably isn't going to be a long-term contract, but there's a spot available at centre-half forward or centre-half back or whatever to help us while we sort of help develop our other players. So I'm not too fussed either way. Like you said, mate, the chances of unearthing a 200 gamer in the mid-season draft is unlikely. So I'd be happy to try and just patch that key defensive post and give Larky some support and see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be tough this week. Obviously, Zerha, Common can't come in. Where we're playing this week, it's traditionally going to be, very slippery as well. So, it wouldn't be a bad option to go a bit smaller this week and just play Larky, further up the ground and maybe go, maybe get in a Boston of Vlaggy into the team and play him as a forward that can and give him some open space to run into. So I'm not too sure if they're going to go that way, or maybe they bring in Colin Jones because he's the only other option, or I don't know, maybe they get Wade Dirksen, who knows, tomorrow. So we'll see what happens. We'll find out next 24 hours, I guess.
Yep.
Obviously, it's been a big week and a half for the club. A lot of media scrutiny. Caro certainly got a few points across, and a number of others. How do you think the club handled it all? Like, I thought they were okay on Thursday. The CEO came out and so forth, and the coach as well, who's been under a lot of pressure, a lot of scrutiny. How do you think it was all handled in the end?
I thought it was a bit weird, Dean, I must say. When Brady Rawlings came out on the radio and said that, tried to play it off as it was all a coincidence, that those three left, I didn't buy that. I didn't even really buy Brady's his sort of tone. It felt like he was sort of going off the cuff type thing. So I didn't particularly like that it was Brady that got pushed forward to talk about that. I didn't think it was his position to talk about that. I would have liked to have seen something a bit higher up, and I didn't particularly like that these were sort of they're all unrelated. I think, again, mate, I don't know what's happening above that, whether it's coaching or whether it's board level or something, but I still think there's something there that's irritating the club.
Yeah. Oh, look, and that's that's part of it. I think when you're getting flogged every week on the field, it can affect it off the field as well. Yeah, you'd have to be a fool not to think that. Yeah, a few of those reports are probably fairly accurate. I'm sure there's going to be players that are disgruntled. Yeah, I mean, we've heard from a handful, like the captain and so forth, that are supporting a coach, but I'm sure there's another bunch of others that, aren't happy. I mean, and that goes for probably even successful clubs. Like, you've probably got someone like Melbourne, like maybe, and this is just me speculating, I'm not, I don't have facts here, but someone like a Brayshaw at Melbourne who's playing in the back pocket, probably thinking, he's happy to sacrifice for the team, but come the end of the year, when he's out of contract and other clubs sort of say, no, you can play midfield, then, yeah, I mean, yeah, it can change very quickly. But I think it's even worse when you're really struggling. Look, me and you have been following North Melbourne for a very long time, and I can't remember, we followed him in the 80s when it was quite tough. I can't remember a team that was this bad, that was getting flogged regularly like this. So, yeah, it's a tough situation for everyone at the moment, and in particular supporters who are getting quite frustrated at the moment, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. And then, you know, this all snowballs onto, you know, I'm starting to get concerned about re-signings. Do players stick around? What chance have we possibly got of getting free agents at the end of the year in the state that the club's in with football department people leaving en masse, getting flogged every week? You know, I sort of think unless we can turn it around in the second half of the year, who do you approach at the end of the year who might be an unrestricted or a restricted free agent and try and sell them the story that, listen, we're on the right track?
Yeah. I mean, you've probably got more chance of losing players than gaining players in that regard. So, yeah, they have talked about trying to identify the list gap, probably looking at players in their mid-20s that are struggling for opportunities at other clubs. Yeah, you might be able to get two or three of them. That's just me speculating. But, you're only getting a fringe players that aren't going to improve it. I suppose it's just going to come from the young kids at the end of the day. And like you said, we haven't – we've got 18 players out of contract at the end of the year, and a few of them are probably going to get chased by other clubs. Like, I mean, we're lucky we're playing that poorly that probably not many are going to get chased. But someone like a Cameron Zerha, who's delayed – contract negotiations, I think West Coast would be interested in him to come back home. I assume they'd have a fair bit of money up their sleeve as well. So, and we don't look like previously under previous management, we were very quick to sign players halfway through the year or, a few rounds in. Or sometimes it was probably showing a bit too much loyalty to certain players and giving them long-term deals that probably weren't warranted. But, yeah, this has gone a complete opposite approach. And, it's almost you've got to earn your contract these days. And, you don't want to lose – we can't afford to lose another, Robbie Tarrant or anything like that, can we?
No, absolutely not. That's proven. Look, I don't know how much better we would be with a Robbie Tarrant there, but I think it's kind of like death by a thousand cuts, isn't it? You sort of lose Ben Brown, you lose Higgins, you lose Tarrant, and, all of them individually, you probably went, look, we could probably cover that. But all three of them collectively have probably left a big hole in leadership and experience. Right. Yeah. And stuff like that. And now, probably explains a big chunk of where we're at.
Yeah. More than likely, I couldn't agree more with that. We'll go to the game after all that talk. We don't want to talk too much about that. Events that have transpired. What do you make of the game?
Look, then it was pretty much a carbon copy of the last 2 months. Competitive.
Yeah, I could have recorded our last episode and put it to this one pretty much, couldn't I?
Yep. Competitive in parts, some incredibly bad decisions in other parts to the point where, you could see the heads drop and then a horrible second half or third or last quarter, which... our last quarter, we swapped them. I guess the third quarter was pretty deplorable. That was it.
Yeah, what'd you make of the playing the loose man in the back line. I didn't like it. It took us a while to adjust, and particularly when you got what's his name, Hill, pretty much by himself all game creating, and Jack Sinclair as well, two good users of the ball that create run and dash, and we just let him go far too easily, and our spare was dropping far too deep as well. Instead of being about 50 or 60 out, he was probably 20 metres out in the goal square. We're obviously worried about King. He's in very good form, so we'll try to double-team him as much as we could. But, we played into their hands a lot, didn't we, tactically?
Oh, absolutely, Dean, because we don't have, particularly with Aaron Hall injured, we don't have those, as for a lack of a better term, those quarterback sort of half-back flankers that you're happy to let them go loose because they're so creative pushing forward. With Hall gone, I guess, Lukey Mack can do it a little bit. But really, any time it came to half-back, we kind of froze. Got it sort of froze, went sideways, sometimes backwards, and just allowed them to set up behind the ball. And by the time we decided to kick it into the – if it got to the forward 50, everyone knew where we were going, straight on top of Larky's head, and it just rebounded straight out.
Yeah. I mean, I found the tactics very strange as opposed to Melbourne. We'll chip, do three or four chips to usually the halfback flank or back pocket, and then you wouldn't go back the other side and try and open it up again. It was more, all right, we'll just go down the line to Larky, Zerha, or Goldstein, who'd go two on one in the air. They'd bring it to ground, and front square, we had no one all game. Yeah. It was really bizarre. Like, they had everyone there. And then they'll just run and spread and absolutely killed us, as soon as the ball went to ground. And it's a reliant too much. We talk about Nick Larkey only having, I think, he had two touches.
Yeah.
Didn't have a touch in the first half. But, geez, we didn't make it easy for him, did we?
No. Oh, no. And that's the thing. I know that you could look at it in just on what he did on the stat sheet, but I think I read somewhere that of the 50 defensive movements we did out of our defensive 50, less than half actually got into our forward 50, which shows you how many times, more than half the time, it got intercepted in the middle of the ground. We didn't even get it into forward 50. Yeah. And then you think about the ones that did get in there. Well, a lot of them were shallow entries. A lot of them were just hitting hopes, not really hitting up leads. And I think for someone like a Nick Larkey, it must be incredibly difficult to have any confidence to lead out, or that the ball's going to be kicked to your advantage.
No, it didn't happen all game pretty much. Even the third quarter when he had his first touch, it was a fair grab. It was a hit hope, like you said, just a ball that went straight up in the air, and he knows his player underneath. He still missed the goal. I mean, when things aren't going your way, not going your way, are they?
No.
But, it was obviously a really disappointing performance. 21 inside 50s in the first three quarters. Really tells the tale. It was always the game where we're trying to minimise the damage. It was like, let's go for a 5-goal loss as opposed to a 60-plus point loss. Did you feel like that? Because it was very flat, I found.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, I sort of felt that, look, mate, to be completely honest with you, I sort of thought, look, let's hope it's a competitive effort. And when I saw, was it Daniel McKenzie turn Curtis Taylor inside out, not even inside out. He just basically stopped and shook him off. Yeah. I kind of thought it's going to be another one of those days where we put in that kind of, token effort.
But
outside of a handful of them, I thought, a lot of them kind of half-tackled, half-chased.
Yeah.
And you're right. It was almost like a protective game plan where as long as my man doesn't get it, I'm not too worried what happens 30 metres up the ground.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. David Noble talks a lot about these advanced metrics that we're doing well in. Do you have any idea what that could possibly be? Because we're pretty much coming last in every, or second last in every, advanced metric I've seen. Is there anything like maybe time where we don't have possession? Maybe we're doing pretty well in that or something like that. But I can't see anything where we're actually good at.
Well, we won the tackles and the clearances. So that, for me, was almost You know, for me, I always think that's a non-negotiable. Before you can start saying that you're making improvements, you've got to win those. Then probably comes contested possession, which we lost, and uncontested, we got flogged. So mate, unless he means, tackles and one percenters and things like that, like you, I think we get torched, and statistically we did. We literally got torched in every other measure.
Yeah. I'm not just even talking about last Sunday. I'm talking about the year in general. I remember, I think you got asked that question in the Q&A, and they pretty much asked him, what are the advanced metrics? And he didn't really answer. He said, we're doing really well in these advanced metrics and all that sort of thing. So, it's interesting. I think it's almost a deflection point to me, that he's just saying we're doing well here to sort of, basically the fact that we're actually doing a lot worse this year than last year. So, that's just my opinion anyway. And I think a lot of people probably agree with that at the moment. Any positives for you out of the game?
Yeah, mate. Well, look, Bailey Scott continues, I think, to improve. I thought Jed Anderson keeps improving. I thought his attack on the ball and the player was fantastic. Jai Simkin, again, he's starting to win a lot of the ball. I know he kind of does butcher it a little bit, but I think half the problem is getting it, which he is doing. Goldstein, I thought, was great. Did his part, and then it really sort of drops off from there, mate. Zeeble was, I'll give him a pass because he did present physical pressure and tackled hard and appeared to try and do his bit. But outside of that handful, I thought everyone played either below par or well below par.
I couldn't agree more. Jack Zeeble laid, according to Champion Data, 56 pressure points, which is quite elite, and 10 tackles for the game as well, which means his effort was definitely there. Jai Simkin, 29 touches, 585 metres gained, 14 contested possessions as well, 10 clearances. Yeah, he was fantastic. And Jed Anderson as well. 28 touches, 12 tackles, 69 pressure points, 7 clearances, 16 uncontested possessions. He's almost back to where he was last year. So that's obviously a good sign. I was going to talk to you about LDU later, but I wanted to talk to you about Hugh Greenwood. 26% centre bounce attendances for the game. If he's not in the centre square doing what Ben Cunnington does, because I think last year at Gold Coast, the 30 of his possessions come from clearances. If he's not in the centre square getting clearances, he's ineffective, isn't he? I mean, he had 7 touches for the game.
Well, largely. He's certainly not a guy that seems to win too much uncontested football or create. He seems to hunt the contest, and when the ball clears, that's it. He's gone until the next stoppage. So I think, admittedly, we got him to the club to sort of help out in that space. Yeah. And then with the injuries and the unavailability of, so many of the players throughout the first half of the year, he's had to almost go in as a midfielder. But I think he's the kind of guy, if we had who we wanted available, he would almost, he'd start on the bench or almost come on as a sub, as that pressure sort of mid or even a stopper.
That's what I thought, because he's playing half forward a lot, and I thought, they might put him on Robert Hill or a Jack Sinclair, but as the defensive type forward, just trying for something different. But they didn't even do that. And I just found it a bit bizarre that he was playing half forward a lot of the game, where that's not his strength. So, I mean, he only had 7 touches. He had 3 till three-quarter time. Couldn't get anywhere near it. So, it was a bit strange, that sort of tactic. And he's one of the leading tacklers in the competition. And to keep him out of the centre square was a bit of a strange choice. But, obviously there's a method to the madness. I thought LDU wasn't in the centre square as much either, but he was in there for 74% of the game, which is better than last week, actually. So, no, it wasn't too bad in that regard. I mean, we do have a lot of midfielders at the moment in the team, don't we?
Look, we do. We've certainly got a lot of players playing as midfielders. in the team currently. I mean, I'd love to see what the side would structure up as if we had you know, a Will Phillips available and a Ben Cunnington and Aaron Hall and those type, whether they would actually push some of those guys out to, would a Tarrant, I think Tarrant Thomas currently would probably be better served on a half forward flank. He doesn't look fit to me.
No, he's out of form, isn't he?
He's out of form. He doesn't look fit. He doesn't seem to have that acceleration at the moment so many times. Yeah. And even LDU to an extent on the weekend doesn't seem to have that acceleration at the moment. They seem to be going in third gear. If the ball comes to them, great. They fight for it. If it spreads, they're out.
Yeah.
So, you wonder where those guys would be. Would they be, you know, would a Horn Francis be playing more as a permanent half forward if there was availability?
Yeah.
You know, I think it's hard at the moment with the amount of injuries that we've got.
Yeah. I mean, Tom Powell's pretty much squeezed out of the midfield at the moment. He's playing like as a high half forward flanker. I think he only attended 17%, I should say, not 70, 17% of our centre bounces. So he's almost out of the midfield at the moment. He's kind of playing as a high half forward that pushes into the midfield a little bit. But, I don't think we're short of midfielders at the moment. We're short on key position players, and that's what we've got to kind of work on. So, what can you do, I suppose? So, look, we haven't been competitive for a long time. It's been a number of weeks, probably since, round two against West Coast where we won. Every game's been over 47 plus points. Where do you think we're lacking as far as being competitive? Is it as simple as we don't have the personnel? Is it tactics from the coach? What do you think it is, or is it just a combination of everything?
Look, honestly, Dean, I've said this before to you. I think we are a far better side than what we're currently playing at. I don't buy into the Corns theory that they're, you know, the drafting's been terrible. There's certainly been errors, as every club makes. But I think there's probably at least a dozen guys on that ground on Sunday that you could look at and go, you're playing below your best. I don't know why you're playing below your best, but you are. And I think that's partly to do with confidence. I mean, you can see that in the way we move the ball through the middle, or the fact that we don't. Nobody seems to take a running bounce and try and create anything through the corridor. I think that's a lot to do with it. Now, whether that's a game plan, which we've often said we're not even sure what the game plan is currently, whether it's the message coming from the coaching staff and the players aren't buying in, or whether it's just the fact that loss after loss after loss has left the playing group basically going out there thinking, I wonder what we're going to lose by today before the ball even bounces.
Yeah, no, well, it's almost getting there. So I was expecting, like, I went into the game thinking, like, I didn't expect to win against St Kilda, but I went into the game thinking that we were, a chance of being really competitive, like a 3 or 4 goal loss. But that was, you could sort of tell probably, at the end of the first quarter with 3 goals down. And, it's just a bit of worry. Every time we get challenged by a team where they get a bit of a run on, or whether it's 2 or 3 goals, well, you could sort of see the belief is just going out of the players. And it's almost a matter of trying to minimise the margin. And we're not even doing that at the moment, are we?
No. And you wonder, Dean, is that senior leadership?
Yeah. I think so.
Would we be different if Robbie Tarrant was there and Ben Cunnington was in the middle?
Yeah, sure.
I think we would, but it's a hard thing to prove at the moment. But you're right. It just seems that at the moment we're mentally really, really fragile. And as soon as the wind blows against us, we seem to drop our heads. And you can almost sense that 4 or 5 goal in 10 minutes is on its way.
Yeah. I mean, we're a bit too – like. I mean, I talked about the age gap, what we're missing. We're a bit too quick to get rid of players like a Trent DeMott, who was a senior regular for a number of years. Only 2 years ago, people were talking about him as the next captain, and maybe even a Sean Attlee. I know he had his critics, but he was a 200-plus game player, and you'd be walking in our team right now, wouldn't he?
Well, yeah, I guess. Maybe they, the list management, who, God bless them, half of them are gone, maybe they thought that the Jared Polacks and the Aaron Halls and that were just going to slot in and replace your Atleys and your Jamie McMillans and all that type. We had them coming through, you know, your Lukey McDonald as well. But for whatever reason, whether it's, you know, and I've heard a lot of supporters talk about player development and how we tend to, we don't seem to be able to fast track anyone or players tend to stagnate on our list and show moments, but then never really progress, whether that's the issue of whether it's player development or not. But you'd have to say, mate, you look at, you know, the guys that we've got rid of, and then on current form, God, even Madjack would walk in at centre-half back at the moment.
Yeah, I'll probably take him right now. Even Mason Wood was quite good on a weekend, I thought. Had 19 touches, you know, played his role for the team, got a few inside 50s. Uses the ball quite well. Even he'd be quite hitting for us right now. So, you know, we've gone down the path of cutting a lot of players. There's probably just got to be questions of have we cut too many and thrown too many kids into the deep end that haven't been given a chance. Like someone like a Flynn Perez, who's come from two ACLs, would have liked a few more weeks in the reserves to find his fitness, but he had to get thrown in pretty quickly. You wonder if it's actually hurting him long term more, you know, because he's playing in teams that are losing by, you know, 50 plus points every week. So, we're talking about now we have to get those types of players back in. So it's almost like we're going back around in circles, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, mate, I think I've mentioned this to you before, Dean. You know, I've always, especially of recent time, I've really questioned our strength and conditioning team or our injury management team or wherever that sort of falls under, in the fact that we tend to, a lot of our players tend to get what seem to be 2 week injuries at every other club, and they somehow balloon out to 8 and 10 and 12 weeks. And we just can't seem to get these young kids onto the track to get games into them and develop them. You know, like, again, I see, you know, just recently that Phoenix Spicer might come back and play twos on the weekend. Now, I mean, literally, he's been battling hamstrings for 18 months. Is that us? Are we doing that, or are we just picking kids that are injury prone and just crossing our fingers and hoping that getting them into the system will cure them of their ailments? I know, you know, Comben, as we spoke about before, he was known to be a little bit sort of injury prone through the TAC Cup, and you know, we've got him in, and lo and behold, it's going to get close to 3 years with one game to his name.
Yeah, and he's, every time he seems to get close, he seems to get another injury. So, that's it. I mean, I guess the issue is, I mean, it was only a few weeks ago that we're getting a lot of soft tissue injuries, and that's more of a concern. I mean, you can't help bad luck. Like, if you roll your ankle, that's a bit different. But if you get soft tissue injuries, then you've got to question the load management of these players and how you're preparing them for AFL football. Like we had Aiden Bonner, Jason LaFrance missed through hamstring soreness, and I think there was someone else that missed through a hamstring as well that was out for a couple of weeks. I can't remember who it was now. Aaron Hall.
Coleman Jones missed last week with quad soreness.
Yeah, so, yeah, and that's another soft tissue injury. So there's got to be question marks about this new strength and conditioning team they've got at the moment, because we seem to be getting a lot of soft tissue injuries, which is more of a concern than, you can't help Charlie Comben has had to have a clean out in his knee. That's unfortunate, obviously. Cameron Zerha's got a hot spot in his foot, which is another thing where, that's the second player, like Eddie Ford's the other one. That's had a similar sort of thing. You've got to question, well, what are they doing? Are they putting too much pressure on their feet? Are they giving them the wrong runners? I don't know. I'm no expert here. So, there's definitely got to be question marks as to, you know, the workload of some of these players that are getting these injuries. And it's making, hard work that if it's not already for us to be competitive. So, it's going to be, it's going to be interesting to see the developments more towards the end of the year, or if they do anything else, if they change that again, or I'm not too sure. So, we'll see how we go. We'll go back to the game. I wanted to talk to you about the Goldstein and Sherry battle. So it looks like Goldstein's pretty much got the mantle as number one ruck again. 73% centre bounce attendances as opposed to Tristan Sherry, 27%. Is that the right move? A lot of people look. It might be a case of Goldstein might get another 12 months, not a 12-month contract, and might keep him on next year. No, you know, and Tristan Sherry might have to move. I'm not so sure, but they can't. They probably wouldn't keep both of them on the list next season because that means it hinders Callum Coleman-Jones again. I want to just talk to you. Is that the right move? Do you think?
Well, look, I thought that we lost a bit of momentum when Goldstein went out of the middle.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm certainly not saying get rid of Sherry. We need to persist with him, but his form hasn't been great the last couple of weeks. Now, whether that's because he's not getting the centre clearance, he's not getting the centre square time, or not, but I thought even around the ground he was beaten. Around the ground in positioning, and in the centre square as well. So I'd be happy for him to, take a back seat in the second half of the year to Goldstein, and then sit down with Goldstein at the end of the year. And if we are going with Sherry and he's the future, and the club says that's what we're going to do, because I think Sherry's out of contract at the end of the year.
Yeah,
as
that's
well.
Right. He is. Yeah.
So they're going to have to decide one way or the other. Do they go to Goldstein? Look, we'll keep you for another year, and you can start the apprenticeship with Edwards in the twos, and start to bring him up with Coleman Jones, or whether they move Goldie on and say to Sherry, look, here's a 2-year contract or a 3-year contract as of round one next year, mate. You're the boss, and you're going to have to shoulder the responsibility. But you're right. I can't see it working with Coleman Jones, Sherry, and Goldstein.
Yeah, Coleman Jones was their big name recruit over the off season. Paid him a lot of money, gave him a long term deal as well. So I don't think they're going to waste another year of just playing him in the reserves next year again. So it makes it interesting. Like if you are going to go Tristan Sherry, then all right, we have to play him as the number one ruck, with Goldstein playing as a forward. Like you play Tristan Sherry 73% time in the in the centre bounce. I mean, at the end of the day, we're getting flogged anyway. But if that's not the case, then get Callum Coleman-Jones, because I think he's more of that. He's got a more natural sense as a forward rather than the Tristan Sherry. Would you agree with that? He's had four touches in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah,
Tristan
he's been. Sherry. Look, I don't question his attack on the ball.
Yeah,
of course. His attack on the man. He's very physical, but he's got to do more. You can't. I don't care how good you're going. You're not going to hold your spot as a ruckman when you're getting two disposals. You're averaging two disposals a game.
Yeah, definitely not.
Unless you're winning the hit-outs, like you're getting 60, 70 hit-outs a game to advantage, I can't see how you're going to sustain your position with two disposals. So I think he has to do more. Whether they say it that, when we come out of the bye, that, okay, now we're going to, it's up to you, Tristan, from here. Goldie's going to play predominantly as a forward and give you a chop out, at the 10-minute mark in time on or something, that's fine, but he's got to do more.
Yeah. Oh, look, he might miss this week just based on these last 2 weeks. Can't get going like that. You can't. And if it's going to be a bit of a wet game this week or a very slippery game where the ball skids along the ground and it's very hard to take marks, and you may as well play a bit smaller, and he misses out, I guess, and you may as well get a Jaden Stevenson in or something, something similar to that. So, it's going to be interesting to see how that develops over the rest of the year. I think, Goldstein is your number one ruckman, and I've got no doubt that, David Noble's feeling the pressure a bit, and we kind of have to get competitive, and he's the number one player that's going to, get you to that place where you are more competitive than what we've been. So, you can certainly understand it from his point of view as well.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
Yeah. I'll talk to you about, we talked about players that we need in the 24 to 29-year-old. I want to talk to you about Kane Turner. He's been thrown around a lot this year as forward, as a defender. I thought Yeah, I thought he was poor on the weekend. Just dropped a couple of marks. Missed the handball receive as well. His hands were shocking. Where's he at with his football?
Well, I think he's, look, to be honest, Dean, I think he's just a good average footballer.
And it
just strikes me as odd that he's in the leadership team, because I would have thought, Dean, being in the leadership team, that's who you point out to your young kids that you want to aspire to, or you want your footy to reach this guy's levels, right? Yeah. And he doesn't do it for me.
No.
You know, he just, like you said, he makes some awful mistakes. I know he does compete hard, and he has had some success as a lockdown mid, and maybe that's his role, but he certainly gets exposed. Machito Owens kicked two goals on him, which he just basically out-positioned him. He just got to a better spot, and then he drops two absolute sodas. I think that's hard, I'd say, for a Horn Francis to look up to and go, that's where I want to get my game.
I don't think Horn Francis would be looking at his tapes too closely and thinking he's a role model, that he wants to be that type of player. So I hope he doesn't anyway. But, yeah, it's interesting because Aaron Hall is a possibility to come back this week. He might get dropped. Is that a fair call? Because who else would you drop from that back line? Maybe Lachie Young, but I think Lachie Young's certainly had his moments and had better moments than Kane Turner.
Well, I've got to agree with you, Dean. I'm not a big fan of Lachie Young, but I think he brings more to the table than Kane Turner does. He'll certainly go for his marks. Sometimes, probably about a dozen other blokes that roll through that back line, he takes risks that he shouldn't. And sort of overestimates his ability, but he's not exactly Robinson Crusoe down there. He will play tall if he needs to and stuff like that. So I think he certainly brings a lot more to the table than Kane Turner does. But then again, the message then is we're dropping one of the players out of the leadership team because he's not good enough to play in our side, which is a horrible team.
That's exactly right. But it has happened before. I remember Jasper Pittard was in his second year. We put him in the leadership group and then was dropped halfway through the year and never got back in and got delisted. So, it can happen.
Yep.
And you've got to evolve with the time sometimes. So, like you said, I think his best role probably is that lockdown probably midfielder. But at the end of the day, we've got LDU, Jai Simkin.
Yep.
We want to develop. Those younger guys still, and, don't we? So
I think, Dean, if you're going to be a lockdown mid, you've got to be in the role of like a Ben Jacobs. You can't just go around and get three disposals yourself. You need to know when to lock down and you need to know when to create. And I haven't seen that in Kane Turner's game.
No, he doesn't get enough of the ball, does he?
No. And when he does, it's not like I don't think the opposition would dread him, the ball being in his hands, for being, super creative with his kicking or his dare.
No. He usually just chips it sideways every time he gets it 20 metres or something like that. So to the next option. So, maybe we're being a bit harsh, but, we need more from those types of players, I think.
Absolutely. At the end of the
day, especially when you're struggling as well. So we talked about possible changes. I think we'll get Ben McKay back this week. Aaron Hall's a possibility to come in. Obviously, Cameron Zerha comes out. Any changes you'd like to see to the team?
Well, look, I think, like you said, I watched a bit of Jaden. I watched a bit of the game on the weekend. I think Jaden Stevenson probably gets a go. I'd like to see him come back in. Who else would we look at, Dean?
Common, can't come in.
I think Bosan Vlahi played okay.
Yeah, he didn't set the world on fire.
No. So, who else would we have that could, Hall and, and obviously McKay would be massive for us. Whether you bring McKay in and throw Walker forward to give Larky some support.
I don't really like Walker forward. I mean, if it's going to be a slippery sort of game, I think we can go a bit smaller and just play Zeeble as a full forward, Larky, centre forward.
Yeah,
if Larky's not getting a touch again, just push him up the ground, play him, but get him a few cheap kicks in the back line as a loose or something like that. So, I don't mind going a bit small this week, just throwing something different out there, because at the end of the day, we're losing by 10 plus goals every week anyway. So, yeah, I mean, why not try something different? Even Jaden Stevenson playing 4-4, he did it at Collingwood for a couple of years. So, I don't know. You know, there's not many options again. A couple of injuries again, and we're sort of scraping the bottom of the barrel. So, but I think Kay Turner might be in a little bit of trouble this week to keep his spot. Outside of that, there's no one else you can really, really drop. Maybe Coral Aiden might be in a bit of trouble if Mackay's back. Yeah,
I'll tell you one thing, Dean, just talking on that. I'm really surprised that young Jackson Archer keeps getting named as an emergency. Only because I've watched his last few games, or in fact a lot of his games this year. And, I mean, the kid's very young, but I just haven't seen a lot of what he does to make me think that he's that close to senior football. But he's one that continually gets into squads. So who knows whether we see him.
That's a fair point, because he has improved a little bit, but he doesn't look like a player that's AFL ready.
No.
And I'm not too sure if they're just trying to give him confidence, because I don't think he's close to getting picked, but I would have thought a Matt McGuinness, who was very good on the weekend, would be a lot closer than a Jackson Archer. I remember watching the first couple of games Jackson Archer started. He was getting two or three touches a game, and he was, way behind. Yeah. He's improved that a lot. He's getting 10, 11, 12 touches now. And he does, he's got his old man in him. He's a tough, hard footballer. But, I wouldn't think he's close to AFL level at the moment. Yeah, so that's a fair point. Did you see Matt McGuinness? I thought he looked pretty good on the weekend too.
I didn't see a lot of Matt McGuinness. I sort of watched a bit of the last quarter. And a bit of the third. But I have seen him. I've watched him closely the previous weeks, and he has been probably our most consistent forward, other than maybe Comyn. But McGuinness gets out there a little bit more regularly. So yeah, he's certainly been good.
Yeah, he had 27 touches, 22 kicks, 5 handballs on the week, and uses the ball really well. And it's probably the top player we need in our back line. Because he does drill a pass and he takes it on. He's one player that I'm going to keep an eye on over the next few weeks. I don't know if he gets in this week because he's got Mackay, and if Aaron Hall comes back, then there's no spot for him really. So we'll see how we go.
Yeah.
Did you want to add anything else, Frank, or are you happy to let that go?
No, mate, that's really about it now. I guess we just cross our fingers now, hope that the injuries start to turn around for us and see what we can do this weekend against the Gold Coast.
Yeah, well, we can't be too optimistic, can we?
Well, look, I think it will. I think it will turn, Dean, at some point. I think it will turn, and our form will improve. I just, like you, I watch it every week, or I go every week and think to myself, hopefully this is the week, and then within 15 minutes you go, nah, it's not this week. But let's hope it's sooner rather than later anyway.
Yeah, well, we certainly hope so. But, look, take one week at a time, and one week in football can be a long time, so we'll see how we go. But anyways, Frank, thanks very much for coming to the show. Where can people find you on Twitter if they want to have a chat? I did have it up before.
Just Frank Descalzo will be you'll find it, or the Twitter handle is Mally No Show. But, you'll find me on the North accounts, mate. I'm usually sort of bouncing around there yourself. So, they can find me on there.
Yeah, sounds good, Frank. Well, I appreciate you coming on the show, and I'm sure we'll chat very soon again.
So thanks to Frank for coming on the show once again. Good to get a therapy session out of the way. And, Frank's always giving good insights into that. Don't forget, the mid-season draft is on tomorrow. I'll do a bit of a review of that as well on Thursday. I'll get a guest on. I'm not too sure I'm going to get at this stage, but like me and Frank talked about, I don't want to put too much expectation on mid-season draft. There was a bit of, I did tweet to someone, I can't remember who it was now, that I wanted to get a key position player and a small quick forward. There's a lot of criticism. Why are we getting a small forward when not criticism? Yeah, it was all friendly. Sort of questioning. I suppose questioning is the right word. About why would you want to get a small forward? We've got Marnie. We've got a number of others as well. My thing is, like, I want to get a really quick small forward. There was talk about R2 Bosanavalaga, who's been playing in the back line. Paul Curtis, he's still a young player. He's only 19 years old, and the jury's, I guess, is still in on Phoenix Spicer, who we talked about with Frank, who's been out for 18 months with hamstring issues, so we don't know if that's going to be an ongoing issue. And I like those small pressuring forwards. You talk about all the good teams. You know, when Richmond won the flags, they had those Castagna and, they built their forward line through Jack Riewoldt, when they first won the flag without Tom Lynch. They built it through pressuring forwards, and I really like those types of players that are quick. Kaiser Pickett, Charlie Spargo, Neil Bullens, you talk about that, Melbourne, Castagna, Dan Butler, so forth. And even St Kilda, when they first year Dan Butler, did he get All-Australian, or he was close to All-Australian? Just getting those players are very valuable. I'd like to see someone like that. The more you can get of them, the better you are. So, that was my thinking. I've got no problem with anyone disagreeing with that. So, it's going to be interesting. We've got pick 2 and pick 17, I believe it is, tomorrow. So, we'll see how we go with that. But I'm not going to think it's a franchise-changing player we're going to pick up, or two franchise-changing players we're going to pick up tomorrow. We'll see how we go anyway. Thanks to all the comments as well. Don't forget to like, subscribe to the show. Appreciate all the comments last week. I did get one person give me a bit of stinging criticism. I think it was on Saturday night or Sunday morning. I can't even remember. It wasn't that bad. But a lot of your supporters were sticking up for me. It was pretty much saying that I needed to... I can't even remember what he said, actually, to be honest with you. But, that's... what did he say? I'm trying to think now. So, it was a long time ago. But like I said, those sorts of things don't bother me. So, but thanks to everyone that was sticking up for me, even getting in my DMs that saying don't get discouraged and all that sort of thing. And I didn't get discouraged or anything. And, I certainly don't take things personally. I never take things like that personally. And you got to have a thick skin if you want to be... if you're going to put a podcast out, it's not going to please everyone. So I'm always looking to improve, and I'm happy to get feedback on things I need to improve at. So, I'm always looking to get better, not just in podcasting, but in life as well. I want to be better each day. Each day I wake up, I want to become a better version of myself. So, sorry for the Tony Robbins sort of motivational speech there. But, that's... that should be a goal for everyone in life. So, thanks to all you lovely listeners as well, and all the people are on Twitter that are following me as well. I'm very grateful for everything at the moment. I've talked enough shit for this episode. I will be back, like I said, on Thursday, which is only a couple of days away. I'll do another podcast out then. We'll do a bit of a preview of the game coming up against Gold Coast. We'll do a bit of a preview of the draft as well. Hopefully there's not too much controversial news like last week. Hopefully we can have a bit of a quieter week this week. It's probably helping that West Coast are struggling worse than us at the moment, and probably a couple other things as well that headline in the media that has beaten us to it. We're still getting in the media a little bit, but not as much. Anyways, that's it for me. I've talked enough shit. I've rambled on for long enough. I will leave a shout out to Christian Bardsley. Bye for now.